outside of the Bible, the greatest two documents that have ever been penned are the Constitution of the United States and the Declaration of Independence. And the reason those two documents have lasted for 230 years is because they were written on the knees of the framers.
This is the voice of the Colorado Liberty Movement.
I'm not a sixth grader. It's fine you want to lecture me on the Constitution. I studied the Constitution myself. I am reasonably well educated.
Live from Studio 56, this is Grassroots Radio Colorado.
Let's be clear about one thing. We're not here to rebrand the party. We're not here to put a fresh coat of rhetorical paint on our party. We're not here to abandon our principles in a contest of government giveaways. We're here to rebuild a country.
Now, Chris Cook with Grassroots Radio Colorado on KLZ 560.
Freedom, liberty, truth.
American woman said, get away. American woman, listen what I say.
We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights, and that among these are life, liberty, and health.
Could that make you any more ill? Life, liberty, and healthcare are our inalienable rights. This is Chris Cook. You're listening to Grassroots Radio Colorado on KLZ 560. And I am in studio with the esteemed, the inimitable, the one and only Ken Clark of
Freedom 560. Careful how you put that. Thank you, Chris. It's good to be back.
That sound clip, I mean, what do you think of that?
Well, I know where it came from.
Yeah?
It came from a flash mob.
Okay.
And there are flash mobs happening all over Denver Metro, and they are proposing what is called Colorado Care. And so they have decided that we all have certain unalienable rights, and among these are life, liberty, and health care. That's actually what you heard. So it is a complete distortion and corruption of the Declaration of Independence. What could be more American than that?
Turns it on its head, and that is the problem. Health care. Is healthcare a right, Ken?
Well, it depends. Now, if you are part of the liberal left that believes that it's okay to enslave a certain sector of our society, then you bet healthcare is a right.
Whatever sector that might be, whether it's based on your profession or based on your skin color, the Democrats have always been behind enslaving somebody.
Well,
that is what they are about.
And so they're going to enslave the people in the healthcare profession to make sure that everybody has that right. Then they're going to enslave the rest of us to indentured servitude to pay for it.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the same thought process, and we'll get to Initiative 20 in the second half of this hour. This is the same thought process that's going on behind Obamacare as well, is the idea that everyone has a right to health care. If you have a right to something, that means that help me define a right. Help me.
Well, okay. That. Let's just this. It's easy to do it this way, because let's define you do have the right to life. Okay, you have the right to life and to be alive.
Absolutely.
However, you have the responsibility to protect that life and to be responsible for that life.
Exactly.
Okay, now you have the right to life, which means no one can take it from you.
Right.
Okay, but you also have a responsibility to ensure that you actually live, meaning you have to take care of yourself, you have to eat, you have to provide shelter, and you have to provide yourself with
healthcare. What a concept.
Now, a right is something that you are endowed with your creator that no one can take away from you. Life, liberty, pursuit of happiness.
Right.
Doesn't guarantee you're going to be happy.
No. Pursuit of happiness is a completely different thing.
Yeah, but in this definition, you have a right to healthcare. Now, think about this. Do you have a right to water?
Only if I secure it.
Only if you want really, really clean water that comes through your tap.
Right.
Well, but that's not a right. That you have to pay for.
Right.
Now, if you
want
to go down to the lake or the ocean or whatever and get your buckets of water and do it yourself, I suppose that's fair.
Yeah. As long as it's a public source, I guess, or, you know, I mean.
As long as nobody has the water rights or owns those water rights, but do you have a right to food?
I have to pay for it, so I'm guessing not.
Well, assuming that you do have a right to food, that means somebody else has to provide for it.
Right.
Otherwise, you have to go out and get it.
Right.
Meaning
right.
either buy it, hunt it, kill it, grow it, harvest it, whatever.
Right. Exactly. Well, and this is, I mean, think about the right to liberty, okay? Life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness. So along those same lines, using that same logic, you have a right to be free. You also have the responsibility to secure your freedom.
That is correct. And your rights, and let's talk about the right to be free. That doesn't mean the right to be an anarchist, because you cannot harm anyone else in the exercising of your right to liberty and or freedom.
The infamous saying, my right to swing my arm ends at the tip of your nose.
That's right.
Yeah.
Right. And I can flail my arms all the way. That's why there's
a
reason why.
As long as you stay on that side of the table.
And there's a reason why we don't have a webcam, because you don't want to see me doing this. But I mean, I can flail my arms all I want, but the moment I touch you or invade your personal space, I'm invading your rights.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay. So, but healthcare is a different thing, because it is a service that is provided by one person to another. And the moment that you decide that you have a right to healthcare, that means that you have a right to demand to extort that service from another human being. That is the way it works.
Yeah. And so how can you define that as a right?
You can't.
No, I don't see how. I mean, life is very simple. I mean, you have a right to life. You bet. But you have the responsibility to provide for that life. Food, we talked about that. Water, we talked about that. Healthcare, we talked about that.
Exactly.
That is part of the responsibility for protecting your and ensuring your own life and that of your family.
So how does this play out in real life? I mean, obviously, like we were saying, Obamacare is one of those things where the government has decided... Obama has decided that everyone has a right to health care. So what are the real life effects of that? They have to extort money from the rest of us in order to pay for those who are high risk.
Well, right? what they have decided is that you have a right to health care. Therefore, society as a whole has a responsibility to provide it for everybody. That's what they've decided. That is the pure definition of socialism.
That is.
Okay. And
from each according to his ability, to each according to his needs.
There you go. There you go. And so if you define it in the socialist utopian nightmare, does that even work? Whatever.
Utopian nightmare works for me. I like
that. Yeah. And so if you define it in their nightmare scenario, that means everyone in society has to collectively provide health care for everyone.
Right.
And doctors are supposed to be the utmost of saints, and they don't go to school for, what is it, 95 years to get your...
Pretty close, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, once you get done with your internship and all that, your residency. So those people are... It's okay to make them slaves to the state, because they have a skill that society needs.
Right, and we need to make sure that they're doing God's work. I mean, that's really what kind of boils down to.
I don't know if I'd call it God's work.
No,
I'd call it the...
In the secular minds of the leftist, in the progressive left's secular mind, that is the equivalent of God's work. They need to donate themselves to the cause.
Yeah.
They have to donate themselves and who they are and what they do and the skills that they possess, along with their many, many, many years of schooling that they paid for. They have to donate that to the cause. They should not be profiting off of that.
Oh, how dare you profit?
Exactly.
How dare you profit? How dare you have a profit motive that has given us the most ingenious innovations in healthcare the world has ever known? How dare you use a profit motive? You should just be doing that at the goodness of your own heart.
So let's back this up then, because the progressive left then says, that, okay, well, we'll pay them whatever it is that they need to make in order to incent enough people to come into the profession. But where do they get that money? They have to extort it out of all the rest of us.
They have to put the rest of us in indentured servitude in the form of taxation to the state, and so that collectively we can provide these services to everyone.
Right.
Everyone. And then
just because that's their right.
But then also because they know so much more than us and they're so much smarter than us, they're going to set themselves up as the arbiters of how much those people get paid and who gets what health care and at what cost.
Exactly. Exactly. Because they do know better than the rest of us.
They do.
Us unwashed heathens who have not a clue how to actually exercise our rights. So when we come back, we're going to be speaking with Ed Hazelmeyer. He is a healthcare policy analyst with the Heritage Foundation about why Medicaid signups are skyrocketing under Obamacare and how Obamacare actually is playing out in real life. You're listening to Grassroots Radio Colorado on KLZ 560. Welcome back to Grassroots Radio Colorado on KLZ 560. This is Chris Cook. I've got Ken Clark, host of Freedom 560, sitting in studio with me. And we have on the phone Ed Hazelmeyer. He is the Senior Research Fellow for Health Policy Studies at the Heritage Foundation. Ed, welcome to Grassroots Radio.
Thanks for having me.
And we'd love to have you here. So help me understand this. If Obamacare is so great, why are the Medicaid signups absolutely skyrocketing? What is going on here?
Well, yeah, what's going on is that the states that expanded Medicaid then turned around and really sort of beat the bushes and enrolled people. In other words, they weren't just sitting around waiting for people to walk in to get enrolled. They actively went after them. In a number of states, what they did was they simply went to their rolls of people who were receiving food stamps or some kind of nutritional assistance program, as they call it now, and they just started enrolling those people. So what we saw in 2014 is for the states that adopted the Medicaid expansion, the enrollment grew quite quickly.
I can only imagine. And so they didn't even include in their estimates the fact that they would be going after and marketing to these folks. They were just estimating walk-ins or something?
Well, yeah.
Is that...
Yeah, and different people have had different estimates on this in the past. I mean, there was actually, when the bill was passed, the Congressional Budget Office had a different set of estimates about the Medicaid expansion than the Office of the Actuary at the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, and that was basically came down to the Congressional Budget Office figured it would be like in the past where they expanded Medicaid and people sort of trickled in over time. Whereas the actuary said, no, you've got all this other stuff where you're rounding up people, you're going to fine people for not having coverage, you're going to have these exchanges. If they go to the exchange and they qualify for Medicaid, you're going to put them into Medicaid. We think that people are going to come in quicker and mostly still be enrolled in the first 2 years. So I think the actuary was right about that. Remember also about this population. This is a very different population. We tend to think of Medicaid as really... disadvantaged or vulnerable populations. I mean,
right.
Half of the Medicaid enrolls in any state prior to Obamacare were children. Okay, so Medicaid is for the poor kids, for disabled elderly, disabled adults, elderly who are on Medicare but maybe are so poor that they need help with the Medicare copay, that sort of thing.
It's a real safety net.
It's a safety net for them. That's absolutely right. This expansion population, this additional new population, Obamacare, is a totally different population. What they're doing is they're expanding coverage to able-bodied, working-age adults. So the kids are already covered, the elderly, the disabled, they're already by and large covered. They're now covering working-age, able-bodied adults. Nationally, the figure is 82% of them have no kids even. So, I mean, it's not like they even have a family to prevent them, you know. It's not like a single parent who says, well, I have to take care of kids, so it's tough to work. And that varies from, you know, about 75 to 100% in some states, depending on how high states have covered parents.
Right.
So these are, and half of these people are between the ages of 19 and 34. So what we're doing is you're expanding this to, you know, somebody who's 22 or 20 or something, 21, and working a minimum wage job or graduate students.
Okay.
You know, I actually personally know medical students in medical schools from upper middle class backgrounds who now are on Medicaid because their state's expanded Medicaid. They were my former graduate fellows, yeah.
Nice.
So this Medicaid, as it turns out, is like pretty much every other government program. It's ever expanding, and it just wants to encompass more and more and more people. Started off for kids, now it's families, now it's single people, now it's graduates, now it's medical students. It's pretty much everybody.
Well, and that's not accidental. I mean, that's deliberately by design. There's a whole bunch of folks on the left who have advocated and worked assiduously at this for years. Congressman Henry Waxman, you know, who's finally leaving Congress, I mean, he was one of the Watergate class, you know, that elected in 1972 or 74, very, very liberal. You know, I mean, that's what we're really seeing. That group the sort of 60s left finally got to the point where they were actually running the House of Representatives, Nancy Pelosi, Speaker, Henry Waxman's chairman of the committee. Well, Henry spent 30 years expanding Medicaid incrementally.
Okay.
So, you know, because their view is you expand Medicaid up the income scale and you expand Medicare down the age scale, and at some point you wind up with everybody in a single government program or two government programs, which you then merge. That's where they're going.
And their objective is a single payer system, basically.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, they're very you know, straightforward about that.
Well, of course. Well, so what, Ed, what is the fiscal impact of this Medicaid expansion? This is funded by the feds, right?
Well, and that's where it gets kind of interesting. I mean, you're in Colorado, which is a state that has expanded Medicaid. And, you know, the Supreme Court said, look, you basically can't force the states to do it. You have to give them a chance. But the Supreme Court didn't actually change the way the law was written in Obamacare. And so now you have this situation, if you're a state like Colorado that's expanded Medicaid, you've essentially agreed to make it part of your permanent mandatory population, meaning the stuff you have to do to get $1 for the program, to get any money.
Okay.
Which means backing out of that, you can't simply say, oh, well, now the feds aren't paying as much, we need, you know, we'll cut back, because the beneficiaries could sue and say, well, you actually agreed to make this mandatory that I be covered. So what I've advocated is to say, look, what folks in Congress and Republicans should do is to say, look, here's the deal. We're not going to pay extra. I mean, this is the other inequity. You know, you're paying extra, the federal government, for putting healthy, you know, able-bodied 20-something-year-olds on the program. But you're paying the state less for doing what the program's traditionally designed to do, which is to serve disabled and vulnerable poor children and people like that.
Right.
So there's a huge inequity there. And so I think that the outline of the deal that ought to go forward would be to say, look, we're going to change the law to say that this is no longer a mandatory population. It's optional for the state if you want to do it. But you have to do it at normal match rates, which means the state has to pay a lot more of the share. Now, I don't know off the top of my head what it is in Colorado, but every state pays at least 50 cents. Some states... Well, every state, the federal government pays at least 50 cents on the dollar. In some states, the federal government pays more because they're poorer states. But say you have to, as a state, pay anywhere from 30 to 50 cents on the dollar.
Okay.
You're going to think more carefully about this program.
Well, sure.
You know, that's the problem. Because, see, this is the other terrible inequity. Because the traditional population, not only does the state not get any money, but, you know, 10 years from now, a poor kid born in the projects in Denver, say, would never qualify for this extra federal money.
Okay.
Because they would have, under the old rules, have met Medicaid eligibility.
And so it's actually inequitable to that vulnerable population that was originally served.
For years, for decades, I mean, forever.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, I mean, I use this example. My favorite, I mean, you know, people will get shocked and surprised about this, but you can actually go back, and any of your listeners could do this too on Google. You can go look this up. The newspaper in Hartford, Connecticut, the Hartford Courant, you want to go to, it's either October 1st or October 2nd of 2013. Remember, that was when the exchanges first opened and everything crashed, except for Connecticut.
Okay.
And so Connecticut actually worked in the Hartford Courant. Did a news story about it. It's the local paper and the biggest paper in Connecticut. And in the news story, they talked about some of the people who managed to get through and get enrolled. This is day one of the rollout of Obamacare while everything else is collapsing and not working and people couldn't get on. And you go back and look at this news story. And so in the news story, you'll find that there's this one fellow who is a 30-year-old graduate student in law school. In Connecticut, I didn't say what college, who had insurance already and went on the exchange to see if he could find something better, but because he had no income, was told, oh, you're in Medicaid.
Gosh.
So this is in, you know,
he already had health care.
Word for it. You can go and look up the October 1st, October 2nd edition of the Hartford Courant from 2013. You can find this.
That's amazing.
Okay, so this has been happening since the beginning, and the inequity of this is that the federal government pays the state of Connecticut 100 cents on the dollar for covering that young man, okay, but for the poor kid in the projects in Hartford or the disabled person you know, who's living on Social Security disability and has, you know, the state of Connecticut being a wealthy state, federal government will only pay 50 cents on the dollar for
right,
those.
Right. So there's less
and this
available.
Goes on forever.
This that's
10 years from now, some other graduate student, I mean, the federal contribution to the expansion phases down to 90 cents. But 10 years from now, if this doesn't change, there'll be another graduate student in Connecticut where the government, the federal government will pay 90 cents on the dollar, and there'll be another poor kid in the projects in Hartford where the government will pay 50 cents on the dollar.
That's absolutely tragic.
It just seems to me, though, that this is how it always works. I mean, every time the government gets involved, I mean, and it's always the poor people that get hurt the worst, always the people they profess to be serving.
Always. Always.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, yeah, and that's the biggest problem. And you know, that's the basic difference, I think, between liberals and conservatives and their philosophy and the approach to these sorts of things. Is the liberal says, oh, you know, here's somebody with low income, let's dump some benefits and money and et cetera on them without thinking what the consequences are. And the conservative says, well, you know, is this something that's permanent? Is this something transitional? I mean, you know, okay, you're in graduate school, you have low income, yeah, but, you know, if you're bright enough to be in graduate school, you're probably going to have a fair amount of earning potential down the road, especially if you're studying to be a lawyer or a doctor.
Exactly.
Should we really be doing this? Well, maybe should we have something else for you? Because this is one of the things that they did in this law is they said, oh, well, we're not going to have an asset test. We're not going to check to see if these people have assets. Well, you know, I've got this report. I mean, here's another one I've heard, you know, coming out of my
just
colleague.
Got a quick 15 seconds or so.
And... Oh, just, you know, farmers.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, low income, lots of assets. A bad year, low income, lots of assets. Oh, you know, qualify just... for Medicaid.
Just absolutely amazing. Ed, thank you so much for bringing this to our attention. Where can folks find your work?
Well, heritage.org.
Okay.
And it's organized by subject area because, of course, my colleagues work on everything, you know,
everything.
Yeah.
Ed Hazelmeyer, Senior Research Fellow for Health Policy Studies at the Heritage Foundation. Thank you so much for bringing this to our attention. And this is something we'll keep an eye on. I appreciate it.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. You're listening to Grassroots Radio Colorado on KLZ 560. We'll be right back to talk about Initiative 20. Welcome back to Grassroots Radio Colorado. Shall we sing?
Sing it, sister. Sing it. There wasn't any music. Sing it.
I'm not going to sing it. I'm sorry. My voice is melodical enough.
Actually, you sing quite well.
Well, I do, but not without music.
Oh, you do,
I'm not. I have fun. Whatever. Stop. Okay, so that smart aleck that's sitting across the table from me is Ken Clark, host of Freedom 560. I'm Chris Cook. Welcome back. We're talking about health care. We're talking about Obamacare. We're talking about a right to health care because we all have a right to health care, right, Ken?
Well, according to the flash mobs that are pushing Initiative 20, yes, we do. Yeah.
And judging by your tone of voice, you don't agree with them.
No, I don't agree with them at all. So let's explain what Initiative 20 is.
Okay.
Okay. This
Help
is a,
me out here.
Initiative 20 is coming to us from ColoradoCareYes.co.
Aww.
Colorado Care.
Fuzzy name.
Yeah. Now, we just spent the last segment talking about Medicaid.
Right. Okay? Medicaid expansion under Obamacare, which is now expanded to folks who have plenty of assets. And
yeah, and it's a problem, right?
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to fix it. I'll show you how. We've talked about the healthcare exchange, Colorado Connect for Health, right?
Which sucks, yeah.
Yeah, but we're going to fix it because they've only blown $200 million on it so far, so we're going to fix
it?
That. Yeah, that's it.
That's it? Okay.
We're going to fix that, too. And then, have you ever had a workman's comp claim?
Yeah.
How fun was that?
Not very.
We're going to fix that, too.
Oh, great.
Yes, we are.
Okay.
Yes, we are. We're going to do a ballot initiative. We're going to do a ballot initiative in the state of Colorado. It's called Initiative 20, and we are going to take over the healthcare exchange, Medicaid, and workman's comp.
Who's we? You got a mouse in your pocket?
Colorado Care.
Oh, okay.
Colorado Care.
What part of Colorado Care?
Now, and so that's what this does. It is a single-payer program for the whole of Colorado citizenry.
Okay, and so it takes over the healthcare exchange, it takes over workers' comp, it takes over healthcare insurance.
Medicaid.
And Medicaid.
Yeah,
and kicks the whole bit.
Yeah, I mean, there's no need for health insurance anymore.
just walk into anywhere and they'll just take fix your patch you right back up and send you back out on the street, huh?
Yeah, yeah. And the best part is under Section 3, this is posted on the internet. Go to coloradocareyes.co. The best part about it is Section 3, Colorado Care Establishment. There is hereby established a political subdivision of the state called Colorado Care. Colorado Care is not an agency of the state and is not subject to administrative direction or control by any state executive, department, commission, board, bureau, or agency.
Ken, have these people ever heard of checks and balances?
Oh, come on, Chris. Doesn't that make you feel better?
Not in the least. It sounds suspiciously like the Colorado Healthcare Exchange has just wasted $200 million of taxpayer money.
Well, but the Colorado Healthcare Exchange is a free market solution that everybody can go to and get private healthcare insurance or Medicaid.
Okay, that's one of
or
something.
Stuff.
Well, that's one of those. This is one of those times when I wish we had a webcam because the way you just rolled your eyes was absolutely brilliant. Okay, all right. So
I've got the entire initiative in front of me, and I'm going to hit you with some things.
Okay.
Okay, that are in here. And I want to get your reaction, okay? And so here is under Section 3, Part D. Okay. Well, it's socialism. We ought to talk French.
We ought to speak French.
We ought to speak French. The purpose of Colorado Care is to finance health care services for all Colorado residents, to administer state and federal health care funds, and to institute fiscally sound payment policies that improve and maintain high standards for value, quality, healthy outcomes for all beneficiaries.
I didn't hear anything about unicorns and glitter in there.
Well, but you got to remember, because in the same section, part one, I don't know how to say one in French. Okay.
It is.
All right. It is not a state agency, and it is not subject to administrative direction or control by any state executive department, commissioner, board, bureau, or agency.
Okay, I get that, but it's going to do all these wonderful things in part two.
Yeah.
Duh. Okay.
They're going to set up a board. Okay, a board.
They're going to turn reality on its head.
Set a board. And that board's actually going to be elected, and they're going to have kind of like congressional districts.
The board's going to be elected by the people?
By the people, you bet.
Really?
Uh-huh. Yeah. And they get to set up the bylaws, procedures, rules, and policies. And let's see. Then where's the next one? They will use the most recent fiscal data, and the board shall establish central purchasing authority responsible for negotiating favorable prices for prescription drugs, medical equipment, and other products and services required by Colorado Care. Have you ever known Medicare to pay anyone fair market value?
Gosh, no.
No.
No. So, no. They are responsible for messing up the market in the first place. That's why healthcare costs so much, is because of Medicare and Medicaid.
Okay. Now this is a big long document, so I'm only hitting you with the highlights.
Oh, great.
So under the provision,
more.
The board shall, number G, establish procedures for ensuring financial sustainability by adjusting payments and benefits. What does that sound like?
Socialism.
Sounds like a death panel.
Yeah.
Because they have the ability not only to adjust what they're going to pay the hospital, but they can also adjust benefits. And if you cost too much.
Read it one more time. Read it one more time.
Establish procedures for ensuring financial sustainability by adjusting payments and benefits.
Yep. You're right. You are absolutely right. And they laughed at Sarah Palin. I mean, that's the only way this stuff works. Is for you to cut off benefits when the patient benefit to society is less than the cost of whatever the procedure is.
Well, but
in their estimation.
Let's go under Section 6, because we're going to hit this for half an hour, so I want to hit as much of it as I can. Section 6, healthcare benefits paid by Colorado Care. This is where your pink unicorns come in.
Oh, okay.
Under number 2, Colorado Care shall pay for all healthcare services to beneficiaries, regardless of the cause of their injuries or illnesses.
Okay. So they shall pay for all benefits, but they can limit benefits.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. What that means is no pre-existing conditions.
Understood.
That means no pre-existing conditions. Also, no deductibles and no copays.
So it's all just free.
Yeah.
That's where the glitter comes in.
It is. That's the glitter part. Yeah. So they're going to, we already covered the fact that they're going to take over Medicaid, workman's comp, and the healthcare exchange. So I won't go over that again. All right. So they'll transition. They'll do, okay, we got to get to the fun stuff. Funding.
Oh, there's fun stuff?
Funding.
Okay.
Now, how do you think, how do you think they might decide to pay for something like this? Because don't forget.
Voluntary contributions and donations.
Well, I thought they would just print money.
Oh, well, they could. No, we're the state of Colorado. We can't do that. And they're not even an agency of the state, so they can't do that.
Okay.
So no.
You'll love this. Okay. Under Section 9, Part 2. Now, they've got transitional funding. Okay. That goes away. Okay. So after the transitional funding, the Department of Revenue shall begin collecting a premium tax of, number A, 6.671% of total payroll from all employers. 6.671% of total payroll from all employers.
Moly. Okay.
Okay, now that will satisfy their obligation to pay for health care insurance for their employees.
Under this initiative.
Under this initiative, yeah. But it gets better. Part B, 3.331% of all payroll income from each employee.
Okay.
So if you're an employer and employee, combined, you're paying 10%. All right. 10% of all non-payroll income from all beneficiaries. Beneficiaries is defined as all citizens of the state of Colorado.
All citizens of the state of Colorado.
Residents. I should say residents.
Yes.
Because citizens is a different animal. Residents, state of Colorado, legal or illegal. Doesn't matter. Okay? You'll love this. So we're talking 10% straight across the board. 6.6% from the employee.
Everything. Yeah.
3.4% from the employee. And then 10% of all non-payroll income.
So that would be passive income that you're getting from rents. That
dividends.
Would be stuff that you earn as a contractor, which you're already paying self-employment tax on. Dividends.
1099 employees.
Yeah, that's what I just said. Yeah. That's atrocious. That is absolutely insane.
But payment of the premium, and this is in Section 3, this is in Part 3, Section 9, payment of the premium does not constitute the purchase of a health insurance policy by an employer or a taxpayer. In other words, you're still subject to the Obamacare fines.
So you're still stuck with Obamacare. And they put in this What does this work out to be like over the next 10 years?
We'll get to that because
this is huge, but it's a huge tax increase. We pay 4.63% tax on our income in the state of Colorado.
I want your listeners to listen into the next segment. So I'm not going to answer that question, what it will cost per year until the next segment, but you'll get this. Now they are being very generous in this because they're going to cap the taxes that you pay. Yeah. If you're an individual filer,
okay,
you are capped at $350,000 a year.
Oh, good Lord.
If you are filing jointly, you're capped at $450,000 per year.
The reaction that I want to give right now, I can't because we have an FCC license.
Okay.
So, yeah.
One more under Section 9 in funding. Okay, this is the real good one. And see what this reminds you of. This is Part 8, Section 9, Part 8. If the board determines that a premium increase is necessary to maintain the fiscal stability of Colorado Care, the board may increase the premium taxes specified in subsection 2, I just read that, of this section, not more often than once per fiscal year, but only if a majority of the members of the Colorado Care Board cast votes on the proposed increases in taxes to approve it.
Uh-uh. That doesn't work under Tabor. Uh-uh.
It sidesteps Tabor because this will be a constitutional amendment.
Uh-uh. That doesn't – that completely sidesteps Tabor. It's an elected board, but – that doesn't make it. I mean, Tabor requires a vote of the people, not of the representatives.
This is an attempt to sidestep Tabor. Now,
oh my gosh!
I'm going to leave the listeners with this little tidbit before we go to break. Colorado Care is a Colorado Care Services, or let me start over. Colorado Care serves as a secondary payer to any health insurance plan in which a beneficiary is enrolled or which may be responsible for a beneficiary's health care expenses. So it is a secondary program.
For the love of God, why? That's beyond idiotic. That is absolutely insane. So we have to buy Obamacare. We have to buy insurance outside of this program, and then they're going to triple our taxes.
Oh no, we don't have to buy insurance outside of this program, but we still have to pay the Obamacare fine because we
still
don't
have to pay the penalties, which is going to ramp up to make it a huge portion of our taxes if we do. I mean, we know that that's what's going to happen. Oh, gosh. Thoroughly outraged. This is Chris Cook.
It gets better. I'm not even halfway home yet.
Ken Clark, host of Freedom 560. You're listening to Grassroots Radio Colorado. Al, I do see you there. We'll get to you right after the break when we come back on KLZ 560. Welcome back to Grassroots Radio Colorado on KLZ 560. This is Chris Cook. I've got Ken Clark, host of Freedom 560, here on KLZ 560. There's a lot of 560s and all that.
Yeah, I host the 1 to 3 p.m. show.
There you go. Sitting in studio with me, we have on the phone Al from Colorado Springs, who has a question for Ken. Al, welcome to Grassroots Radio. What do you got for us?
Hi, Chris and Ken. How are you?
Good.
Good. Ken, I've heard you, I think, three times now in the last 2 days, which is a testimony to how much I listen to KLB.
Thank you.
Good
Thank
man.
You.
I do that all the time. Anyway, I've heard you mention the employers having to pay 100%. All of the employers that are not 100%, the 6.7-something.
6.671.
Yes, that number. That all employers would be required to pay that, but then each time you followed up and said satisfying their requirement to provide health insurance. Now, right now, if an employer only employs less than 50 employees, he's not required. So I'd just like you to clarify, is this going to be an all or all employers that employ more than 50?
I don't know the answer to that question because it does not clarify. What I'm reading to you is Section 9 in this article, Funding of Colorado Care Collection of Premiums, Part 2. Okay, and if you go to Part 2, Number A, it says 6.67% of total payroll from all employers, which satisfies their obligation to provide health care insurance for their employees. That's what it says.
Wow. All employers is all employers.
That comes straight out of this article. I don't have any further clarifications. But as you will see listening in, there are that's just the tip of the iceberg on the issues with this thing.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
But that is exactly how it is written. I read it directly from Initiative 20.
Well, it sounds like we have another fiscal battle on our hands when Initiative 20 shows up.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. Al, I hope you'll join the Army.
Yeah.
I've been here fighting, and Ken knows that.
Okay. Oh, yeah, I do. Thank you, Al. Really
Al,
appreciate it.
Al, thanks for calling into Grassroots Radio. Really appreciate that.
Now, Advancing Colorado came out with a press release, and Jonathan Lockwood suggested that this was a $25 billion a year tax increase on the state of Colorado. Okay. Our budget last year was, what, $22 billion for the entire state? This is going to be a $25 billion tax increase. And here's where I think Jonathan's wrong. I talked to him last night. He and I went back and forth on some text messages as well. And the reason I say that he's wrong, and this is a guess, it is absolutely a guess on my part. I have no factual data to back this up at all. In 2013, Senator Irene Aguilar, Democrat, liberal, socialist, Marxist, arguably one of the most
collectivist statist, yeah.
She proposed a bill that was a single-payer bill in the state of Colorado. She proposed it legislatively in the 2013 legislative session.
Okay.
The fiscal note that came back on that was $37 billion per year.
Good Lord. And what's the total budget of the state of Colorado? It's
about like, $22
billion. Yeah.
$23
billion. So,
okay, so the fiscal note on that little jewel was $37 billion a year. Okay. Now that one, and if memory serves, and I cannot remember correctly, I don't think that one encompassed workman's comp. It was to set up a single payer program, much like this.
Right.
Okay.
Well, which would cover workman's comp and Medicaid and all that.
Okay. So let's assume that it was the same type of program exactly.
Right.
That fiscal note in 2013 was $37 billion a year. So I think Jonathan's estimate at $25 billion a year is maybe... It's probably low by half, okay? Because if it's at $37 billion a year, now the healthcare exchange, they've blown $200 million already on that, okay?
Yeah.
And so that is turning out to be two, three, four, five times more expensive. Obamacare is turning out to be two, three, four, five times more expensive.
Magnitudes.
Why should this be any different? So we could be looking at a $50 billion a year. A year.
Yeah, a $50 billion a year increase.
Tax increase, yeah.
Except for this. It's going to force so many people and employers out of the state of Colorado that perhaps it will drop our population enough. Might be a reason to vote for it, actually. But, I mean, it's
going to... Keep the Californians out? Oh, sorry.
It's going to decimate the economy. I mean, yeah. What employer is going to voluntarily come here when our taxes are then higher? Because that would give us a 14.63% income tax rate.
Now, along with these flash mobs, these people that are out there gathering signatures, they claim that you can opt out. They're telling people that you can opt out.
They just are.
You bet. Just like you can opt out of Common Core and you can opt out of all the park testing, right?
Yeah. Well, you can't opt out of Obamacare.
No, you can't.
Apparently, you can't even amend the Constitution to get out of Obamacare. So.
But they are telling people that they can opt out.
That's a flat out
lie. I've read
this
thing in detail four times. I've taken copious notes on it. You cannot opt out. There is no opt-out provision. Now, they're going to try to get a waiver from Obamacare. They're going to try to get a waiver. It even says so in here. We're going to try to get a waiver. But that comes under Section 12, under legislation, and you'll love this. The General Assembly shall enact legislation, and there are, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 8 different things that the Colorado Assembly shall pass. Okay?
Oh, yeah. They love to be told that kind of thing.
Yeah. One of them is my favorite, that they're going to enact legislation to enable the Colorado Department of Revenue to collect and transfer to ColoradoCare the taxes levied pursuant to Section 9. Okay.
That we were just talking about, the 10%.
Yeah. Okay. Legislation to suspend operation of the Colorado Health Benefit Exchange. Legislation to transfer responsibility for administrating the Medicaid program and the Children's Basic Health Plan. To transfer responsibility for any other state and federal health care programs to ColoradoCare. Oh, yeah. This is a one-stop shop, baby. They're going to enact legislation to enable ColoradoCare to receive the appropriate federal fund contributions in lieu of the federal premium tax credits, cost-sharing subsidies, and small business tax credits provided to the Affordable Care Act.
I want to go back to the General Assembly shall do anything. Yeah. I want to go back to that because the General Assembly in general... I mean, they're the elected representatives of the people. They hate to be told.
You can't do a ballot initiative forcing the General Assembly to pass anything.
So the ballot initiative itself is unconstitutional.
Oh, in so many ways.
Even though it's an amendment to the Constitution, it cannot become a part of the Colorado Constitution because it violates the provisions that are already there.
Well,
right?
And it violates Obamacare in so many ways, I don't know where to begin, because this supposedly lets employers and employees off the hook for providing health care, like the guy that called in just said,
Al right.
Like Al just said. Yet, unless we get that waiver... You and I still have to pay the penalty on our taxes, and so do the employers, unless we get a waiver. And
we might not.
Flip a coin, maybe?
We're going to give it the old cowboy try, though.
Give it the old college try.
Exactly. Right? That's what they're going to do.
Yeah, but what lunatic outside of Irene Aguilar came up with this idea.
Well, that's my next question. Who's behind this?
Well, the only thing I could find, and this was sent to me by one of my listeners, on the Colorado Secretary of State, this the parent company is Coalition for Colorado Universal Healthcare, and the registered agent is a guy by the name of Ivan J. Miller. I did a Google search on him. He is a psychiatrist out of, guess where?
Boulder.
Yeah, what a surprise.
20 square miles surrounded by reality.
He's a psychiatrist, psychologist. I searched for him. Evidently, he doesn't have any issues as far as his practice is concerned. He's in very good standing. But he's the guy that is on this. And the address, I haven't had a chance to look at the address, 35 Broadway, Suite 210. Why does that sound familiar to me? 350 Broadway.
Isn't that where the Colorado Health Exchange is?
No. Maybe. I don't know. And I don't know the reason. I don't know the answer. But for some reason, that address kind of rang a bell, and I haven't had a chance to search it yet.
Okay.
Maybe it's a Gang of Four's hangout.
Very well could be. Mm-hmm. 350 Broadway, Suite 210.
Suite 210.
We'll have to check into that. Ken Clark, host of Freedom 560. We've been talking about healthcare. We're going to switch gears, though, here. I want to talk about the Fifth Circuit decision to let the injunction stay in place against the amnesty provisions. I'm Chris Cook. You're listening to Grassroots Radio Colorado on KLZ 560.